Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, it has been a long, 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 long weekend with the holidays, because, of course, it's Thanksgiving here in Canada. And if you've been listening to our show even a little bit, you know that on the Thanksgiving weekend, we had the Black Library Expo in Chestermere, Alberta, this weekend, which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And I mean, when you say long, long, long weekend, you are not fucking kidding. I mean, I took Thursday and Friday off so I could meet the authors at the airport, drive them around to signings and just random, you know, fun times in Calgary on their free day. So, I mean, despite this being day five off of work, I feel exhausted to the point where I'm just like, yeah, you know what, maybe work won't be half bad compared to just how tired and like worn I am, because again, it was like 4 days. Oh yeah, I know you are not looking forward to Tuesday. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was 4 days of straight expo followed by like family Thanksgiving. So it's just like, I've not had a moment to myself. I feel drained. Yet, with that being said, best weekend ever.
It definitely went very, very well. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we've done this week in hobby. While I do that, I am going to be going back and forth between drinking some wine. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's Thanksgiving and there's always leftover wine that needs to be dealt with.
That is the truth. I actually have a Chardonnay. What do you have?
Cab.
Well, you know, nothing wrong with a cab.
So, I finished painting 750 points of Heavy Gear, which was funny because I really thought about painting them in like this brilliant white color scheme and really kind of going all out on them. And I did one little test model and it rang so similar to the way that I had done my directorate, where it just felt like, God, this is going to take fucking forever and I'm just going to hate myself. So I pretty much got to the end of that one model, said, nope, fuck it, primed them white. Did a soft body black from Secret Weapon Washes, which I'll talk about here in a sec. And then just did a little bit of red with some white striping for the coloring, and they look really good on the table, so I'm very happy with them. I also picked up three more tanks and some dice, and I got a chance to play Heavy Gear, which was surprisingly fun. It was very, very enjoyable. I think you should learn to play it.
We'll see. Maybe if I watched you play a game and or played one with you, I may be tempted, but honestly, I truly don't like the model range. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people keep talking about it, but I look at it and I'm just completely uninspired. I find nothing interesting about it.
I think the model range is very interesting in the sense that if you're not into mechs to begin with, it carries no desire for you. Like me, I played Mech Warrior back in the day, whether it was the tabletop game or the video games, and so I've always had a kind of a fondness for mechs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, always kind of looked down on Dreadnoughts and Warhammer 40,000 just because of the fact that they needed to look more like mechs. But, like, the army that I'm playing is primarily hover tanks and infantry, which is all pretty cool for a game like that. Mm-hmm. I like how
So you like the Tau?
Not necessarily. I have depth perception and females.
Touché.
But really, it's just, you know, the range is wide enough that if you go and you look on their website, there's enough stuff where it's just like, oh yeah, you can make an army of infantry and tanks and things of that nature and kind of play against the gears if you're just not super fond of the gears. So mm-hmm. I'd almost kind of point you that way. But no, like I said, I really enjoyed it. Picked up three more tanks, which equates to about 300 points. So my 750 point army going up to 1,000 is pretty straightforward. The secret weapon, soft body washes. The secret weapon Washington seems really good, and they actually work quite well. The problem with them is that they separate like crazy. I mean, these are a very heavy wash in the sense that the amount of pigment kind of floating around in the liquid is exceptionally high, to the point where if you've ever seen secret weapon washes on the shelf, you'll notice that they are almost completely separated and like all the pigment sitting down at the bottom. So you have to shake it up really, really, really well. And you pretty much have to drop it directly onto the model where you want the wash to go, so that when you're dropping it, you have a nice, even wash. And then every time you go to drop on again onto the model, you have to shake it up again. Like you almost have to, it's like a bad powdered latte that you make in the morning with hot water. You just have to constantly be stirring it every time you take a sip. Like, that's what these washes are like. They work very well, but if you don't shake them between every single time you're putting a drop on the model, the actual finished result is really inconsistent. So there's my bit of advice there. What about you, Nathan?
You know, not a whole heck of a lot. I was really waiting for the Chaos Space Marine Codex to come out. I was fixing some broken models within my Demon Army, but other than that, not much. I mean, I ran a tournament. Does that count?
It does count.
Well, then, yes, I ran a tournament.
So, let's get into higher learning for this episode before we actually start talking about what we're going to be doing for the rest of the episode, which is pretty much just talking about how awesome the Black Library Expo was. But it's true. Higher learning for this episode is Tau, the Tau Empire for Warhammer 40 cow sand.
How now, brown cow?
Warhammer 40 cow sand. At least
we're, you know, it's not about a Cosby moves. Flamer. I mean, you know, it's all right, but it's not Cosby Flamer levels of good.
And like I said, at least we're not talking about moose. So that's an inside joke for like five people. Okay, so,
and if Graham McNeil is listening to the podcast, he is one of them.
It's likely he's facepalmed just now.
Yes.
or Aaron is turning to Katie saying, "What the fuck are they talking about?" But anyways,
I think Katie's blushing because yes, she's a
I don't think that she would girl, actually so be able to repeat what I said.
Not a chance.
Okay, so anyways, Tau benefited very well in 6th edition, but a lot of people will say that they have not benefited enough from 6th edition, and really? Kind of all of their failings are still their failings. That's what I get from a lot of people now. I don't necessarily agree with that.
I was going to say, maybe it's all of their failings as generals are being blamed on the Tau army in general.
Or just the fact that they don't have Kroot.
Hey, truth.
But really,
no, but I mean, like, realistically, let's look at holistically, what did the Tau gain just from an addition change? Well, first of all, they gained Overwatch, which is huge because it actually gives them an ability to shoot more before close combat. They gained random charges, which, as we have said on numerous occasions, basically adds an additional turn before combat armies get into combat. So right. Tau being the embodiment of a shooting army with literally no defense in close combat, save Kroot, now get one extra turn of shooting, and then they get any failed charges with Overwatch and Snapshot, and, you know, so I mean,
Mention regular long board edge or a short board edge deployment.
Yes, let's not forget that they can rapid fire at 15 inches now, which I know Tau players have been asking for since their army came out in 3rd edition.
Very much so.
They can move and shoot at 30 inches, which again is going to actually add on one, maybe two more fucking turns before combat gets in, because they can be moving backwards and still firing to full effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have gained so much versatility and so much additional goodness in the one phase that they dominate that, like I said, you know, to say that they haven't gotten enough is really not accurate at all, because the only thing that they lost is a unit of Kroot that is outflanking may no longer charge the turn that they come out of reserves. But no army can do that. So again, that's a big plus for the Tau, because they don't have to worry about orc commandos walking on behind them and pulling a charge right away. They don't have to worry about any combat units that outflank, because no matter who is doing it, they still have to stand there with their dick in their hands waving at the Tau gun line.
Right.
And it's just, it's such a rough place to be. I think the only place where Tau kind of fall behind is anti-air. For some reason, the Skyray, the anti-air gunship, the first anti-air gunship that was ever in existence in all of 40K, does not have Skyfire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why would it? It's only anti-air. They also don't have a flyer. So, I mean, it means that while Tau are still dominant at the anti-traditional tank with railguns and missile pods and just access to a lot of high-strength shooting, they will struggle a bit with with flyers, so I think that Tau, more than any other army, are going to be running Aegis defense lines, or something similar, because it's giving them cover, which helps them in night fight. It's giving them that sort of anti-air battery, you know. So, I mean, I think you're going to see them making use of fortifications to get their anti-air. But otherwise, holy shit, like, Tau really, really, really got a boost in my eyes.
Right, and I think really the interesting thing with Tau that I'll add that maybe becomes a little bit more of a hindrance for them is the fact that they really lack armor 14, and their vehicles are skimmers, kind of not, you know, mixed with other stuff, and if I remember correctly, nothing in their army has 4 hull points, or does just the Hammerhead have 4 hull points?
Honestly, I'd have to check a rule book, but I can't see it having 4. I would be very surprised. I think it would probably just have 3. But even then, I mean, you know, the Tau vehicle upgrades are excellent. They've got ones that give them shrouded. So, I mean, with how easy it is for vehicles to get cover and distance. So, I mean, they're stacking armor saves, or cover saves rather. They're still very mobile. And even if you choose to go the non-vehicle route, which now for the first time is very effective, because, I mean, I think Tau were the first mech army way back in the day with Fish of Fury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when the whole game system mech'd up in 5th edition, they really fell behind because, I mean, I could buy 2 rhinos for less points than it took to buy 1 devilfish.
Right.
Which really, you know, hinders them in saturating the board with effective mech, especially since none of them had fire points or anything like that. So I mean, they were literally just transports from point A to point B. And now, again, they have a good deal of mobility, and they do not require devilfish to get at it because of the changes to rapid fire weapons, because of the changes to jetpacks. Because remember, jetpacks now move 6, and their assault move is always 2d6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So on average, it got a little bit faster. I mean, obviously, you can fuck the roll up and roll double ones, but that's the truth of any 2d6 roll. You know, but so, I mean, like I said, as a whole, jetpacks got just a little bit faster, which allows them to move their weapons into optimal range, move out of an effective charge range, because with those same changes to wound allocation, they're going to jump into 12 where they're, you know, like their plasma rifles are going to double tap. They're going to clean out the fucking front rank, which, you know, and then they're going to back off 7 inches. Now, all of a sudden, that unit is a good, like, 12, you know, is a good 18, 19, 20 inches away. They can't hit that charge.
Right.
So, I mean, like I said, it's just, I think that Tau are the army that got so much this edition, but they still require a lot of finesse. You know, I've been saying it for a long time that Tau are a finesse army because battle suits are really only good at one role. Fire warriors are really only good at one role. Kroot are really only good at one role. And so you have to end up building a list that is going to have all of these different elements to make sure that you do have a balanced list that can deal with any situation. And you have to make sure that as a general, those units are always doing what they are good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a Kroot who, you know, you want to tar pit are all the way fucking, you know, gone by absolutely nothing, they're wasted. You know, if your fire warriors are shooting at tanks, they're wasted. So, I mean, it's some things like that where I just think that Tau generals need to be better to maximize on how good this edition has been to them.
Right, and I think Tau really also suffer from, like, high elf syndrome in the sense where you have a lot of options and you kind of need to focus on, though, like, one or two of those options in building your army as opposed to taking, you know, a unit of sniper drone team and a unit of the stealth suits and a unit of broadsides mm-hmm. and a unit of battle suits. Like it, you'll find out very quickly that you are running out of points and you're not able to have that core shooting line army or have the support that you need in terms of vehicles because you're just buying up all of the extra bullshit to keep that in your list. The only Tau army that I've played in 6th edition did that, where they had a sniper drone team, 2 stealth suit teams, a battle suit team, 2 six-man fire warrior squads, and a hammerhead.
And it was just... See, for a second I thought you were talking about my wife. I'm like, but that doesn't sound like her.
Oh, that was the second one. Yeah, sorry. I did play your wife. She beat me because she had the infantry one.
Yeah, she had the infantry one, and then she got the deployment zone that forced you to run across a river. And holy shit, could you not make a difficult or dangerous terrain roll to save?
Well, and I hadn't really learned how to use my transports yet in sixth edition.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
So it's definitely a learning experience for both of us.
For sure. No, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And I have seen Tau armies in tournaments, and not the one that I've just run, but I mean, I have seen Tau armies in 6th edition that struggle with those old 5th edition builds. I mean, I really think that in 6th ed, the Fire Warrior needs to be the workhorse of your army. They're fucking 10 points, which, yes, in the 5th edition onward, points costing is probably 2 or 3 points too expensive, but you still have a strength 5 fucking 30-inch range rapid-fire weapon that you can be mobile with at long range. You can double tap at 15 inches. And most importantly, you can stack with marker lights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is inherently what needs to be happening is again, that Tau finesse synergy kind of thing. You know, 12 Fire Warriors isn't really going to do that much damage. But 12 Fire Warriors rapid-firing at Ballistic Skill 5 thanks to marker lights, all of a sudden, that hurts. That's a lot of strength 5 that's hitting on 2s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. And I think you're right. You've got to avoid the high elf syndrome of taking one of everything because it's all awesome on paper. And you really just have to focus on two or three units, two or three elements, and just really go to town on them and make sure that what you are doing is excellent in all situations. And I think when you, as a Tau player, can do that, you're going to do great. But I do think that there's one other thing that we should talk about, and that is Tau as allies.
Well, before we even get to Tau as allies, I think, you know, kind of going back to the whole high elf syndrome, I think if you're building a Tau army with Fire Warriors as your primary kind of workhorse, as Nathan says, and you're looking at Kroot to support them, and then you're looking at a couple of specialty choices here and there, you really have to think long and hard about mobility. You know, the way the objective game is played in 6th and stuff of that nature, it's very important to be able to get around the board, because otherwise, it doesn't matter how much you're shooting, you will eventually lose that game just because you're out of position to do anything. So make sure that anything that you're using to support the workhorse Fire Warriors in your list is something that is relatively mobile and can get to where you need it to be relatively quickly. But Tau as allies is a very, very interesting choice because, you know, an ethereal and some Fire Warriors is kind of a great choice in almost any army.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Tau have those really, really great units. You can take Crisis Suits who are fantastic in terms of mobility and fire output. I mean, you know, they're one of the few units in the game where three models can throw out like 20 shots.
Right.
Easy, if you build them that way. Or they can just be a ton of high-strength, low-AP shots. But at the same time, you know, ally in a unit of broadsides, and all of a sudden you have this, the most effective, you know, single-shot anti-tank weapon in the game. I mean, you know, at 72-inch range, at strength 10, AP 1, so you're destroying tanks on a 4+ if you pen. And that's huge, especially with the changes to the vehicle damage charts. Realistically, what 6th edition did was it said, vehicles, you're no longer going to pen them and destroy them like this. You're just going to strip hull points off them until they're destroyed. So you're going to mobilize them. You're going to destroy weapons. You're going to shake and stun them. And eventually, you'll do that enough to destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
Tau are one of the few armies with those big, bad strength 10 AP 1 weapons that just say, nope, I'm just going to fuck it up. I'm going to hit it, I'm going to pen it, and I'm just going to obliterate it before it gets a chance to move because I have a 6-foot range.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's huge. So when you talk about allies, because when you look at the allies matrix itself, and, you know, Tau can ally with anyone but Tyranids. I mean, sure, they're not all battle brothers, you know, this and that, but remember, the rulebook FAQs basically made battle brothers and, you know, desperate allies no different. You know, you're no one can really benefit from friendly psychic powers and things of that nature. So mm-hmm. why care about where they kind of fall on that chart? And, you know, if you're worried that it doesn't make sense in the fluff, just think about it. Matt Ward could be writing the new Tau Empire Codex, which means none of the fluff will make sense. So who cares? Oh, we had some good Matt Ward conversations this weekend.
Yes. Topic. I believe the word cunt was brought up on a few occasions.
Yes, it was. No, but I mean, seriously. So, I mean, I really think that Tau are a great...
Seriously bring up the word cunt.
What?
I said we did seriously call him a cunt.
We did. You know, but like I said, it's one of those things where I think Tau as allies, they're probably one of the best choices you can go for. No, they don't have psychic defense, but they are able to make up for all of that sort of long-ranged, high-strength shooting that a lot of armies lack. So go nuts if you're going to do it. Take two full squads of Fire Warriors, take a unit of broadsides, and I think you can't take an Ethereal, though, because Crisis Suit Commanders are 1+.
Or 1+, yeah.
Yeah, so just take him with a couple bodyguards, and you get a good unit of three Crisis Suits that have that sort of mobility. And they are truly jacks of all trades. They can fill any shooting role you need in your army.
Mm-hmm.
So do you need something that's going to pour out a lot of high strength, mid AP, you know, strip hull points off of Rhinos shooting? Great, they can do it. You need to kill Terminators? They got that covered. You need to blow up Land Raiders? Also have that covered. So, I mean, whatever it is that you need, you can equip those Crisis Suits for, and yeah, go to town. So, I mean, honestly, I think Tau got nothing but good things out of the edition change. A year ago, I would have probably said that the Tau were past due for a army book update. Now I think that they could happily continue towing the status quo for another 2 to 3 years. And yep. not even see any issues with it. And that includes the new Chaos Space Marine Codex that came out. I do think that they can be competitive against it.
Oh, absolutely. No, I don't think that they've really fallen off. Like I said, I think there's a subset of people out there who really do feel like the Tau really needed a boost, like a huge boost, and that's where they're falling off. But mm-hmm. Again, like we say, they tend to not use Kroot.
Kroot are literally your only answer for close combat in that army. Like, literally, it's the only thing you have. So if you're not taking Kroot, you're basically saying, no, it's okay. I'll shoot them to death. They'll never get to combat. Yeah, and like as a guy that plays a combat army, I can guarantee that I will always get to combat.
Well, yeah, and like, what's a 30-man Kroot squad cost? Like 180 points?
Oh, yeah, they're dumb cheap. Yep, well, absolutely. Yeah. I think they can only cap at 20, but then you add 12 hounds, and they're like 220. Like,
or what? So 10 cheap. Hounds and two Krootoks.
Yeah, good old Krootoks. But either way, if you're not, you know, like I said, if you can't do well with Tau, I think what you need to do is you need to go into the bathroom, look in the mirror, and then you can see the problem.
Yeah, I think that's the case. All right, so let's get on to the main topic for today's show, which is the Black Library Expo that Nathan and I attended. Now, we did not attend this expo. We helped run it, and we were kind of there on the front lines. What ended up happening about a day or so before the expo started is I was talking to Gemma, the organizer, and I said, mm-hmm. Hey, who's moderating your panels with the authors? And she's like, oh, okay, well, this person's doing it, but like they're also working the front and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to work. Like, you know that that's a full day's work, right? Like you've got 15 minutes between panels. There's literally no time to do anything but rush authors between the panels. So it ended up being something that I took over, you know, early in the morning. I said, like, you want me to just handle this? Like, you want me to just make sure that this gets run the way that it gets run? And she's just like, oh, thank you so much. Gave me a hug. We went on from there, right? So the panels were a lot of fun. I think the very first panel included Aaron Dembski-Bowden explaining a scene that he had written for Sister Octavia or another female character in one of his books, having an orgasm while interfacing with her machines, so to speak. And he's like, those sons of bitches cut it out of the book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really funny, though. I mean, basically what he was saying, because I'm sure anyone that just heard like your description is just like, yeah, that just sounds fucked. You know, as he was saying, you know, this is a character who is linked into the warship and experiences everything it experiences. Remember, this is a Chaos warship. This isn't, you know, an Imperium one that's sort of cold and sterile. You know, so this is a demon consciousness that is commanding the systems, and it gained pleasure from hunting and destroying other ships. And so what he was saying was that because this person was completely hooked up, completely connected to it, she experienced its joy in the only way that like her body could pleasure, you know, or could process it, which was to like come, you know, and things like that. And he said like he got it back from the editor and it was like 7 pages of just red highlighted text saying, you know, remove because the Black Library editors were less than impressed.
Very much so, apparently, but...
you know, like I said, I think it's interesting. I don't think that, you know, like if I was, you know, a creative kind of person and I was writing it, I don't think I would have ever made that sort of connection of, no, she totally gets off. You know, the ship is getting off on it. She's getting off on it. Like, it just, I don't think it's one of the things that I, you know, I would have personally done, but that's why I don't write for Black Library. So, hey.
But yeah, that was the first panel of the day, and it really went on from there. But Nathan and his lovely wife, Terry, they ran the Warhammer 40,000 tournament that was going on. It was a team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, primarily there for kind of drawing people into the expo, keeping the room full, you know, getting people involved. You know, a lot of the gamers had never read the book, so they were just there primarily to game. But a lot of them were there, you know, kind of between games, jumping into panels or trying to get their books signed by the authors. Now, the authors who were present was Dan Abnett, Graham McNeil, Aaron Dembski Bowden, James Swallow, Gav Thorpe, Chris Wright, and Nick Vincent. And all of them were just absolutely fantastic. And I mean, I'll go out and say here, like, we finished the expo, we finished the second day, we finished the last Q&A. Everyone had kind of filtered out, you know, by this time, everyone's freaking tired. Everyone's worn out, absolutely ready to just like drink and eat and relax. And so the organizers and the tournament people start cleaning up all the stuff and, you know, getting the tables put away. And we weren't even 5 minutes into that before every single one of the authors was just right there beside you, picking up tables, putting stuff into boxes, helping Black Library set up and get out of there, helping everything get going. And I mean, it was an absolute joy just to spend time with these people. Although I will say, the only funny thing about it is, you know, Black Library was there and like they were going to provide all this stuff. And it's hilarious because it was so close to just being a total debacle from the Black Library side of things. Like, not the authors. The authors were coming, right? Like, mm-hmm. they were going to show up and that was going to happen. But like on the back end, you know, behind the scenes, you know, Jem is in a panic because of the fact that like stuff's not going to show up on time or it's looking like it won't. You know, they're not even sure whether or not they can use the words Games Workshop in the advertisements for the expo. Like, everything just grinds to a halt because Games Workshop is the company we know and love.
Well, no.
Okay.
Well, I know what you're saying, but no, like, seriously, it's just one of those things where it's just like, because I think it was, what, 2 weeks beforehand, they just pulled a fucking fast one, and they were just like, oh, yeah. These two people that had committed to going 4 months ago, whose plane tickets you've bought, fuck you. They have to stay here. No, nope, they're not allowed to go to Calgary. They're not allowed to take the time off. We need them at head office. You know, and again, it's just such an asshole thing to do because, you know, she had been promoting this with all of the authors for, mm-hmm. for months and months and months. She had Black Libraries go ahead. She had the authors go ahead. Every single person was on board, and then 3 weeks out, Games Workshop is just like, no, those two, they're staying. Period. You know, it doesn't matter. And I mean, I just thought, and that was one of those times where I'm just like, you know, seriously, it's 1 week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one fucking week, and you're not even going to let them off, even though a commitment has been made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I'm just like, yeah, you know, we know them. I don't know if we love them because bunch of fucking assholes.
That was pretty much what it came down to. Now, of course, the guys who showed up and lady who showed up were absolutely phenomenal. You know, their family were absolutely fantastic as well. And the panels were all very, very fun. For all those people who didn't buy a ticket for the second day, haha, the joke's on you. Because those panels were pretty freaking amazing. And we even moved all of the panels into the main hall as opposed to in the Q&A room. So we were having Q&As, you know, being shouted out to the gamers playing in the tournaments, you know, people standing in line. The authors were peeking their heads through the curtains while they were waiting in the signing lines and stuff like that while the Q&As were going on. And it was a lot of really fun stuff, like a lot of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily have known about certain characters or about mm-hmm. certain stories and things of that nature. And even though it was some stuff from a game design standpoint or even just like a writing for Black Library standpoint. So, I mean, there was really anything, you know, there was something for everybody in just the panels. That's not even the signing or the fact that between signings and panels, the authors were just milling around having a good time, chatting with people, watching games, you know, just having casual conversations. Like, if you ever wanted to connect with the authors on a personal level and kind of ask them the questions you've always died to ask them, and you didn't come to this, you missed out. Like, and Sunday mm-hmm. was absolutely the up close and personal day, which is utterly fantastic. Not to mention all of the limited edition Black Library stuff that was available. I mean, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, we had first access to book one in the War of the Beard Time of Legends book that we had mentioned 2 weeks ago on the, or it was last week, wasn't it?
It was last week.
You know, on the podcast, we had those, you know, there were 10 Games Day anthologies from this year. You know, and again, this is a book that sold out. They print 3,000 copies. That's it. They brought 10 of them. I was fortunate enough to get my grubby little hands on one, so I was very happy about that. You know, they had fucking Pariah. I mean, I think a lot of people...
Which I am now five chapters into.
Oh, see, I am, despite all of my insistence on making sure I got a copy early, I think I still have to finish my Game of Thrones before I can start it.
That's bullshit.
You know, I get it, because I know Mark is going to spoil it for me. It's just a fact. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm at this point, I am like 4,000 pages into Game of Thrones. I've only got like
300 pages. Yeah, but Game of Thrones isn't going anywhere. You understand that, right?
You know, it is, but here is my thinking. This is only book one of three. That's why I'm just like, you know, even if I wait until I'm done my, you know, I finish the book I'm on and read all of book five for Game of Thrones, book two in that Pariah series will not be out. I mean, you heard Dan Abnett. He's working on super secret project, super, super secret project, Horus Heresy novel, you know, some comic book stuff. And then then the new Gaunt's Ghosts. And then book two in the series. So I'm just like, fuck, man, I got like 2 years before book two comes out.
Well, it's not even an issue of when book two comes out. It's just the fact that, like, how can you not want to know what the hell happens? And, you know, one of the things that I didn't even ask.
Why? Because Ravener doesn't die well?
Well, and that's kind of it.
But it really was that bombshell he dropped in Salvation's Reach Around.
Yes. That was me. That was the erotic Gaunt's Ghost book that I came up with, was Salvation's Reach Around. I beat him to the punch by like a second, and he was very, chuffed, or, you know, he's kind of whinging over the fact that I'm using UK words. He was whinging over the fact that I got to it before he did.
Oh,
and I kept trying to think of other stuff, and it was going to be like On Her Gourd or something like that, but it just didn't work.
No, not like Salvation.
Not like Salvation's Reach That's Around.
A really, really good one.
But then the other one that I came up with was 50 Shades of Grey Hunters.
Yeah, well, but then
Graham McNeil upgraded to 50 Shades of Grey Knights. That was a very fun conversation. But really, you know, that book as a whole, it's just like one of the things that I wanted to talk to Dan about, even when we were doing the Q&As, right, was, you know, when he started Ravener and like Gaunt's and a bunch of other book series, he always kind of starts them outside of the main characters, right? Like, I can't remember which Ravener book it is where the whole first chapter or two is about this super, super, super badass, bounty hunter who just gets mopped up by some dude, right? And it's just like he builds it all up. You don't know where he's going or what he's talking about.
Say, the entire first chapter, or the prologue of Ravener starts from the perspective of the villain that they're hunting.
Right.
You know, so that's again, you know, he's just so badass. You know, the villain is badass. You're just like, damn, you know? So I totally get what you're coming from, because yeah, he does like to do that a lot with prologues and really just kind of set the stage by showing you someone completely
different. Did you read the back of the book?
Of Pariah?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Should I?
Well, I can't say anything to you because you're going to whine about it being a spoiler.
Well, that's because you should. I was going to say, that's because you're the kind of person where you're like, no, it's not a spoiler, but this guy's totally a god. No, it doesn't ruin anything. And then you're just like, what? Damn it, Lang.
I asked you if you read the back of the book. That's all I know. Asked.
I am aware. No, I hadn't. I've just picked it up. I've the only thing that I've started to do is listen to Butcher's Nails, the audio drama about the World Eaters, which is actually surprisingly excellent.
Awesome. So, Nathan, tell us a little bit about how the tournament went.
The tournament went well. Basically, what we did is we designed a team tournament that was supposed to be really laid back in design, because our end goal was to, and this is the reason it was a team tournament, was to create an event that allowed people to still experience the expo, get books signed, go to panels that they were very interested in, things of that nature. So that's why we went with a team format that allowed for, you know, it required three players to be playing at any given moment, but allowed teams of up to six, with the only requirement being that if you were listed on the team, you had to play at least one game. And again, you know, it was one of those things where a lot of the feedback I got from the gamers who were able to get shit signed, because I know that a lot of people got books and even codexes signed by authors.
Yeah, I know one guy got his new Chaos Codex signed by all of the authors.
Yeah, all seven of them. Mr. Wong.
That was also Connor.
I told Connor about it this morning when all the authors were at Imaginary Wars, and he was like, that's a good idea, but I didn't realize he actually went and did it. So I mean, like I said, it's just a lot of gamers were very happy that they also had time to go to panels. The panels were very good. I thought what was a really nice touch for the tournament gamers from the organization standpoint was that the schedule for both days was the same. So, you know, so basically, you know, all of the panels.
We can, like, plan ahead.
Yeah, you can plan ahead. So if you're just like, well, I'm playing game three on Saturday, I'm going to leave it open on Sunday so I can attend the Horus Heresy panel. I thought that was a really nice touch. Now, obviously, because these panels are Q&A focused, even if I'm at Horus Heresy on day one, it's a completely different panel on day two, which, yes. Again, I thought was very excellent. But at least players didn't miss out. So they had a chance to get some games in. They had a chance to go on. Everything as a whole, like I said, really worked out well. I mean, for fuck's sake, to give you an idea of how laid back the tournament was, we announced the pairings for the last round, and at the same time, we also announced that Terry and I, who were organizing it, were totally doing lunch with you know, Aaron Dembski Bowden and his wife, Katie, and we'd be gone well after the last round ended, so when your games are done, just hand in your sheets at the Imaginary Wars table, and we'll announce final results after lunch, because, you know, fuck it, we're doing lunch with ADB.
Right, and you want people hanging around for a while, experiencing the expo and enjoying and themselves.
And that's exactly it. That was part of the reason that we did it. I do know that both Kyle and Gemma did suggest that we put like a 5-hour gap in between games four and five, because it was a 5-game tournament. But I thought that I'd rather have people done super early so that the way they still have like 3 or 4 hours uninterrupted, they can attend anything they want to, they don't have to worry about leaving things early, and also being the Thanksgiving long weekend, if they did have family obligations and couldn't stay, hopefully they had a chance to get what they wanted to get before that point. But yeah, I mean, I was very happy with the turnout of the tournament. We got six teams in. Our total cap was eight, so, and that was a space cap, you know, because I mean, you saw the room, it was kind of small. But I mean, again, I thought it went well. It even has me open to the possibility of running another major tournament outside of the expo, which I never thought would happen again. So we'll see.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. So we got a bit of time here. Let's talk about kind of your best moment from the expo, like the thing you enjoyed the most, or the, you know, if you asked a question, you got an answer you were looking for. I'll start so that you can think something up here.
Okay, you know, I was gonna say, I know my worst. I know the worst one that was such a fucking like blow off from Dan Abnett that I was like, come on.
Go, well, all right, shoot.
The worst one was when I asked if we would ever see a book written from the Emperor's perspective, and then he's like, well, they all kind of are. And I was like, oh, come on. And then they're just like moved on. Like none of them refused to even talk about it again. So I was just like, come on.
There was some conversation about the Emperor in the first Dan Abnett, Dannyverse panel, was there? Yes, and it was very much around the fact that, like, they can't really say anything about the Emperor. Like, there's only a certain amount of information that they're allowed to even talk casually about. He said there was one time, you know, he'd written some books, and it was the first Horus Heresy book that he did, and he wanted to do some stuff with, you know, the rest of the Horus Heresy. And so he went to, you know, like, the lore master for Games Workshop and kind of, you know, had said, you know, here's what I want to do. Can I do this? Can I do this? Can I do this? And the guy said yes to everything, and he was just kind of taken back. So they were having a good day, enjoying themselves, and he kind of had the conversation come around to, like, hey, can you tell me where the Emperor comes from? You know, like, who he is, what he really is about. And the guy just obliged and was just told him everything, told him the Emperor's first name, told him the Emperor, where
Steve,
the Emperor came from.
In case you were wondering.
I always just figured it was Cliff. Toby.
Cliff. Toby Emperor.
That's right. But
Emperor, you know, is actually his family name.
That's right.
It's a long line of Emperor.
He's Emperor the Fourth. But really, you know, it's just like he kind of talked about it. And he's just like, but the thing is, I can't say anything. Like, we can't talk about the Emperor. I think the most they actually ever said about the Emperor was that the Primarchs, as they're written, in the collaborative sense, each Primarch embodies an aspect of the Emperor. So if you want to know who the Emperor is, you have to actually look at the Primarchs. And each Primarch is a part of the Emperor in terms of, like, who his personality is, where
so
he came from, and so on and so forth.
So he's an angry Mongolian who loves sex, is a mutant with wings and one eye.
Personality traits.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know, genetics. Kids look like their parents. I was just assuming.
But so that was more than likely why you got the answer you did, was it's the roundabout way of not saying anything about the Emperor. Because we had a couple other people ask questions about the Emperor, and they're just like, the Emperor's the Emperor. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, afterwards, I think when I asked that Emperor question, it did kind of get other people going, hey, yeah, what about him? Because there were a couple other answers which kind of sussed out that metaphysical aspect of the Emperor and how he's something to everyone and he's all things at once because he's ancient and immensely powerful and people can't quite understand it and this and that. So I mean, you know, kind of in a roundabout way, they answered the question of because I mean, really, what I wanted to know was, would we ever see a Horus Heresy novel told from the Emperor's perspective? Which, you know, at the time I was thinking, you know, would be great because you can imagine the sadness that the Emperor would feel at these sons of his and their legions, you know, siding against the Chaos Gods who have been trying to destroy him. You know, they scattered the Primarchs and you know, all of these things. So, I mean, I personally thought it would have made a very interesting story to be told from, you know, that perspective because you could see it being incredibly sad. You know, well, because you know, like like I personally would see it as being a story, like I said, told from a place of sadness and not anger or anything like that, because, you know, being as powerful and all knowing and almost a deity as Lorgar and the Word Bearers, you know, kept kind of talking about, you know, it's like, you know, he couldn't be angry at that because he knows how chaos works.
Well, and here's the thing, right? Because in some of the other panels, they did talk about the story, though, of the Horus Heresy as a whole. Mm-hmm. And all of the authors agreed that the story is a tragedy. Like, it is written as you know, an epic tragedy. And there's no, you know, it's not this battle thing, but it's brother versus brother. It's a betrayal, but it is absolutely a tragedy. So everything leading up to the end of this series is a tragedy, which kind of leads into, like, the high moment for me, which, if, you know, I'm vain and you know, I like it when I do things that are good and are
vain. Really?
Right.
No,
it happens.
Go on.
You're a hipster though, so it works out.
but you've, like, probably never heard of my emotions.
I probably haven't. But you know, like, there was the fun, witty moments between the writers, and the writers are all exceptionally witty, and all you kind of do is laugh and enjoy yourself. And at one point, Aaron Dembski bowed and said that he would lamp somebody if they ask when the Siege of Terra is going to happen. But really, it's like, you know, it's and then a baby cried and he said, is that baby talking about Siege of Terra? And, like, put his fist in the air. It was really funny. But, you know, it was just like somebody had asked the question, like, where do you see the Horus Heresy ending? Where do you see the, you know, the story actually coming to its natural conclusion? Is it going to continue on into, you know, the formation of the Codex Astartes and the scourging and all that kind of stuff, or is it just going to end with the Emperor sitting on the Golden Throne? And so the authors kind of all gave their side of things, and they didn't know. They kind of said, you know, we haven't really decided that yet. That's something that is going to happen when it happens, and we kind of go forward from there. But there's no real answer for you. Yeah, like there's nothing that we've actually decided in terms of when this is going to end. And it went through, and it went kind of near the end there, and I had chimed in right after everyone else had kind of said their bit, and I was just like, I think it should end, you know, on. It should end with the dying screams of the first 1,000 psykers, you know, who are killed to keep the Emperor alive. And kind of all the others kind of turned and just, at the same time. And I was just like, oh, I win at the expo. I win expo time. You know, and then Aaron said, oh, you're hired. And I laughed my ass off. But I think I threw the mic down at that point.
You actually
walked
threw
away,
the mic down and
pretended to walk away like I'd had a new job. You know, but it was very, like, again, it was just, like, that kind of interaction was the high point for me. Like, it wasn't even the one story or the fact that somebody liked that idea. It was just the fact that, like, you were able to banter with these authors and kind of joke around. And it wasn't just, like, somebody would say, like, hey, have you ever thought of doing this? And they're just like, fuck you, you're not a writer. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm a professional. Go to hell. You know, but, like, everything, like, even Dan had said, you know, multiple times, like, he collects names. You know, he likes to draw on names, and when people give him good ideas or inspiration, like he uses those things. He takes pictures, he writes it down. He's got a little book he carries around with him. You know, a lot of the authors do, and it is very much just that source of inspiration does come from the fans, and you get a real sense of that when you're able to listen to them talk or talk to them yourself. What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me. See, I mean, I was so busy with the tournament for a lot of it on the Saturday. I loved sitting in all of the panels. But for me, I think what truly made this weekend, you know, at least special for me, was the personal connection I was able to make with the authors. And that is because, you know, they're so approachable. They're so, you know, appreciative. They're not like the stereotypical celebrity where it's just like, do you know who I am? You know, so the fact, you know, that you were able to sit there and talk with them about anything, whether it was related to Black Library or it wasn't. I mean, Graham McNeil and I were talking, you know, sharing parenting tips and talking about kids. And, you know, I ended up taking him, his wife and his two kids to you know, an indoor garden in Calgary that had a playground, and you know, and just, it was things like that for me that really, really did it. I think that if I were to pick a moment from the expo itself, it would be the story of how ADB's Grey Knight book has a foreword in it. Sorry, while I talk, I'm actually going to get the name. I bought it.
Yes.
You think I can remember what it
is?
That's
not going to be in there in the next one.
Well, no, what's beautiful about it is he said it's already been pulled.
Yes.
So Aaron Dembski Bowden wrote a Grey Knight book called, it's not even linked to his fucking author page on Black Library. That's great.
Well, there was a question specifically around the fact of, you know, like, what's the interaction between the game designers and the authors? How much do you guys talk to each other? You know, like, do you know what's going to be in the Codex when the Codex comes out? Do you like what's in the Codex? Because, again, that's something that was always kind of a point of contention is, you know, are you guys communicating? How much of that is written by you guys? How much of it is done in this specific way? Mm-hmm. And really, you know, they're very clear in saying that, you know, you have to understand that Black Library is its own entity. And everything written is not necessarily canon, right? Like, there's the canon of the game and there's the canon of the fiction. And they're kind of interchangeable. And, like, you know, Dan coming up with Data Slate and Vox and all these different terms that he uses that are now part of the Imperial Guard Codex because, you know, they were so good and they were part of the books that he had written mm-hmm. Gaunt's Ghosts. You know, he didn't say to the designers, like, hey, you should add this into your Codex. They added it in.
Yeah.
But they're not responsible for going to the authors to double check this stuff. So Aaron had said, you know, he said, I was halfway through writing a Grey Knight novel and then the Grey Knight Codex came out, and then I threw away half a Grey Knight novel.
Yeah, because, you know,
because of the changes, you know, and of course we've bitched and complained about Matt Ward's fluff in that particular codex, and you know, it was very much that you could see the frustration there between the authors and like even when Graham had kind of talked about the Necrons as well, that he regretted the fact that now the Necrons chit chat and talk and have.
Well, as he said, they're mustache-twirling villains. And it's ever since he said that, all I can imagine is robots twirling mustaches. So thank you, Graham.
I used to play bass for robots twirling mustaches.
You know, it's true. And I thought that was the best of your many, many bands. no, but anyway, what he was saying is, you know, after he threw it out, he rewrites the book. He gets it. You know, he submits it. And then he's allowed his sort of author's note. And in this author's note, he, in a really kind of backhanded way, really expresses his displeasure.
So I haven't read this.
At the, you know, if...
You should read it out loud.
You would literally have to pause for me to run to my car and get it out of the car so I can read it. But, I mean, but even that, it's 2 pages long, so maybe, maybe not. But okay. He said that he makes an author's note... That is a backhanded way of saying how unimpressed he was with the new codex. And it got into the first printing of the hardcover book. But then he kind of got, his authors got, or his editors got, you know, a couple of questions about it. And then, you know, they went to him and they were like, is this a backhanded way of insulting Matt Ward who wrote it? And he's like, oh, there's nothing backhanded about it. So they took that entire author's note out. So all subsequent printings beyond the first hardcover printing of the book do not have an author's note in it. And so when I was there, the book is called The Emperor's Gift. You know, when we were there at the book, you know, at the table, I'm like, oh, this must be the Grey Knight's book. I wonder if this is a first printing. I flip it open. Lo and behold, it absolutely is. So I get a copy. I show it to Aaron and, you know, he thinks it's great. I'm like, so, you know, would you kindly sign it and let me know what you think of Matt Ward? And Aaron signs it, and this is literally what it says. You know, I failed my Ward save, Aaron. And, you know, like I said, I'm just like, oh, you know what? He's not going to call him a cunt because I think he's, you know, he's trying. Yeah, he's trying to play nice, so he's not going to call him a cunt. Unlike some... After several drinks of alcohol conversations later, apparently, little known fact, James Swallow has written more Blood Angels fiction than any man alive, word for word. How many calls do you think Matt Ward made to James Swallow to talk about the Blood Angels? And, you know, does this line up with what you've written? How do you think this works? And so on and so forth. How many calls happened?
My guess would be zero.
It was zero. I think it was obvious. Another good moment was when James Swallow himself was saying how he thought the Sanguinor was the single stupidest thing in the world. Because, you know, and this is literally what he says. He was just like, you know what, you know, this is the Sanguinor where it's just like, oh, only when things are bad will the Sanguinor randomly appear and save the Blood Angels. So you can just imagine two Blood Angels in a foxhole being shelled, and one of them is just like, gee, I sure hope the Sanguinor could come and help us. And then, like, looking up in the air expectantly. And then eventually just sighing heavily and just being like, well, I guess we can do it ourselves.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Oh, man. But yeah, it was, the whole expo was littered with that kind of awesome conversation. And I won't go into it too far, but Graham McNeil talked about lizard man sex with a damsel and bi-forked penises. And
oh God, I wish I had been in that. That was Saturday, wasn't it?
That was Saturday in the fantasy Q&A.
Fuck, fuck, fuck. I was. I mean, bi-forked fetuses. I mean, how
Vincent talked about sex and murder. And
ADB like, talked about how he loves to put kissing in his books.
He wants to do Romeo and Juliet set in Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah, and all of his editors only ever take out every single kissing scene. It was like, no, it happens off scene. We can allude to it, but nothing else.
Blah, 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 fade to black.
Yeah.
But a lot of really cool, interesting lore-related stuff. things along the lines of, you know, we characters we can see coming back, characters who get a little bit of explanation. But I mean, so much stuff, it's just not enough for us to cover in the span of an hour-long show. So that moves us on to the stupidity check for this week, which is all you poor bastards who didn't come out to the Black Library Expo. Sorry, it's you today. That was just ridiculous how good it was. And I mean, even for guys who don't read the books, just being able to go and talk to guys who have game design experience and guys who are on the ground floor Games Workshop. And not every question was about the books. There were tons of questions about just writing and about, you know, Games Workshop as a company. How does it work? How does it flow? What are the plans for the future? You know, questions about Forge World and, you know, what these people thought about, you know, the Primarchs getting stats and having models and all these types of things, you know. And it was just like, if you were not taking the time out of your day to get involved and go to this and enjoy it, sorry. It's one Thanksgiving out of the year. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, you know what? I agree. Like, that was the thing is, you know, because of everything that I had going on in my life, which was planning the tournament, having all the work to do with their, like, you know, comping lists and things of that nature, as well as my work exploded into a fit of stupid since they fired someone and assigned me all of his half-assed shitty work to fix. So it's just like I was busy. At no point was I excited up until I think driving to the airport with Gemma to go like meet all of the authors where I'm just like, oh, my God, you know. By the end of it, like I said, best weekend ever. And it's just like everything was great. It was laid back. It was fun. It was interesting. Everyone was personable. You could ask any question you want with very few exceptions. Were there ever... brush offs. I said, I think mine was the only question that I witnessed that they just literally brushed off. And it was just a really, really great time, you know, because I mean, a lot of people have gone to events like San Diego Comic Con. They have done things of that nature. This is nothing like it. I mean, you know, when there's a couple hundred people with the authors, everything feels intimate. It's not like there were thousands of people. It's not like lining up gave you only a sort of chance at getting autographs and things like that. And I think that is what made this weekend so, you know, pardon the really stupid term, but so magical. Where it's just like, you know, these are my idols. These are my icons. I'm not huge on movies or TV. I read a lot of books. And so being able to meet these authors and realize that they are just really fucking cool people that are down to earth, and let's, you know, and again, it was one of those things where we were talking to them after the fact, and they have all agreed that they are willing to come.
Well,
and
yeah, that's what I was gonna,
at any given time.
That's what I was gonna say. Going forward, you can expect Chris Wright, James Swallow, Aaron Dembski-Bowden, Nick Vincent, and then as well Dan Abnett and Graham McNeil again on the podcast, kind of lined up. We are now budgeting our time for the next 4 to 5 months in terms of where we are going to fit all of the authors in with regards to our normal everyday podcasting schedule. But there's going to be a ton of Q&A and just good conversations happening with these authors in the future.
Yeah,
Gav Thorpe is live. Forgot Gav Thorpe. I really want to get Gav Thorpe on here.
You know, yeah.
He had like, the best idea for what's going to happen with Colonel Schaefer's. Oh, I almost passed out. It was so awesome. Because he was talking about like whether or not he would bring the Last Chancers back and do more with them. And he had this amazing, amazing idea where he's just like, well, I kind of had this idea that maybe Colonel Schaefer is kind of like, you know, the Dread Pirate Roberts from Princess Bride, where basically the original Colonel Schaefer, you know, died or retired or was killed years ago by some criminal who he was, you know, essentially leading a squad of, and he becomes the new Colonel Schaefer. So it was this big question about whether or not Lieutenant Cage would essentially come back from the dead as the new Colonel Schaefer in essentially that Dread Pirate Roberts, I think. And I was just like, oh my God, please do that. please do that. That would be amazing. He's like, well, Black Library's not really sure whether or not they want to approve it. I'm just like, you need to do this. You need to do this.
That is a really, really excellent, excellent.
Oh, it's so fucking amazing. But yes, that is essentially the Black Library Expo in a nutshell. Thank you once again to all the authors who came. Thank you very much to their families who were just absolute joys. Thank you so much to Black Library and to Gemma, who just went.
Chestermere Library.
And the Chestermere Library. Absolutely. They were there both days, and especially on the second day, helping out, getting dirty, making that expo happen. So,
the directors was fucking, like, and this is someone that sits on the board of directors for the Chestermere Public Library. She was a sweet little lady, like very much slightly larger than my wife, tiny girl who was hauling tables and chairs and doing everything to help take down. And so, I mean, like, it's just like, I was very, very impressed. I thought it was very, very awesome that she was willing to even help with the grunt work. Thanks to everyone that was involved. And everyone that missed out, you're a bunch of suckers.
Yeah, and will we see it again in the future? I'll tell you that everybody who came there and everybody who was involved is not opposed to this happening again.
Yeah,
there's the Chestermere Public Library. So
yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to say. Is obviously there are always, issues, but there's always question marks, especially when
we got to impress the money.
Yeah, exactly. You do have to impress the money. But that particular member of the board of directors who was there, who was helping out, she was impressed enough to talk about doing it again. And I think that that is fantastic.
Yes, so. It was a, and she was there when Aaron Dembski Bowden answered my question of what is the most awkward question a fan has ever asked you, and his answer was whether or not Sister Octavian takes it in the ass.
What?
That was his answer, and she's standing there just going like, "Oh, okay." Somebody asked Aaron Dembski Bowden that. That was the most awkward question.
I can imagine. I mean, I feel awkward and I wasn't even there at the time.
Joke's on you. I have an erection. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.